Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
That's the sound of another sale on Shopify, in store. Shopify POS is everything you need to sell in person. From payments to inventory, Shopify unites your sales into one commerce platform. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/retail23. shopify.com/retail23.
Josh Brown, why was the Star Wars video game run of the mid-2000s the best thing we ever collectively experienced?
Sometimes I wonder if life will ever get better than that, because what a good string of games.
Oh, I mean, this is the wind that we will talk about the latest video games, the latest talking points in the gaming industry, but I'll tell you what's happening in my life.
Go on.
I hooked up a Steam Deck and a Steam Deck dock to my TV, and I just sat and played the Game Boy Advance version of Star Wars Episode 3 for most of my Sunday, and I would recommend that everybody listening to me does the same.
The way it was supposed to be played on a big screen. Steam
As God willing.
20 years later.
Thing is, I mean, I have a real soft spot for exploded pixel art. Like, you get me some pixel art on the biggest screen possible, I think most of that stuff ages beautifully. Like, I mean, playing a bit of Minish Cap on the big TV as well.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of that stuff. So we thought we'd open the podcast just very quickly talking about that massive run of games, because you did have, and obviously it wasn't tied to a movie, but things like Knights of the Old Republic, those weird spin-offs like Star Wars Destruction, I think is the one you played.
Oh man, I think
the Twisted Metal style one.
I can't remember the exact title, but it's
there
so
was a lot of them.
Great. Well, it was great. At the
all
time.
The Battlefronts and everything. And it just playing through that, because I randomly bought Episode 3 on Xbox as well, because it works on Series X. It's backwards compatible if anyone, or Series S if anyone wants to play those games. Oh no, not Series S, because there's no disc tray. But still, going back through those old games, it just made me go like, man, was it better before Disney? Like, oh my God, how much did Disney kill everything?
Star Wars on the Game Boy is great.
Yep.
And it's probably a better game than the tie-in to that movie that was released on the Xbox. But the Xbox version is still great.
Yeah.
And I prefer it personally. I just remember having a great time with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you go back even further, you've got Star Wars Jedi Power Battles, which absolutely ruled.
You've got
Star Wars Episode 1 The Phantom Menace on PS1, which I'm playing through right now. You've got KOTOR, like you mentioned. It's just a great run of games. And mm-hmm. yes, not everything was great. Star Wars Obi-Wan, by all accounts, wasn't awesome.
I never played Obi-Wan.
Bounty Hunter was amazing.
Yes, it was.
So it was almost as if for every dud, you had one that cancelled it out, so it didn't really matter.
I think you never really got less than a 6 out of 10. And also, those ones that were 6 out of 10s were like those kind of fun 6 out of 10s, where you enjoyed it because you're younger and you can have a bit of nostalgia for it now. Just to quickly touch on anyone else who wants to play the Game Boy Advance version of Episode 3, that game holds up very, very well. The animation is beautiful. It's just nice, tight, side-scrolling beat-em-up levels and a nice little unlock system. There's a branching path thing based on who you're playing as, depending on how your score went in the level. The upgrade points are doled out based on your performance. You're unlocking new moves and stuff. And I always play a game as if like it is that year that I'm in, but I also have a retroactive appreciation for something if I'm playing it now. And like, I was just playing this Anakin. I was voicing his own lines because there's no voice in that in the game. But you know the way it made me realize I hate him. Christensen's performance is more iconic than
it
you
is.
Think. Because you can just kind of talk like this, and that's what he did, master. And I was like just doing this. But in that game, when you like cut a droid in half in beautiful animation, you can pick up parts of them and fling them at someone else. And I was like, this is some psyops business.
Man, as someone who has been playing a lot of Dead Space, the idea of cutting something in half and then throwing it around the arena or indeed into another enemy is something I can get down for. It's such a
That should be a standard mechanic in everything, to be
Absolutely,
honest.
Absolutely, it should be. It's such a great period. That's such a great game specifically. And to be honest, we mentioned this a little bit on the UEP last week.
Yes.
But it's a reason why I'm disappointed with Nintendo's Game Boy library, Scott Tilford, because they should have stuff like Episode 3. They should have stuff like Spider-Man Mysterio's Menace.
They've got Alone in the Dark.
They do have Alone in the Dark.
And that's the only licensed thing they have that isn't their own, but
that's
still.
The one that's the one that got me interested. That's the one I want to play.
On the Game Boy Color. So we thought we'd talk a little bit about Star Wars games, because, you're going through Episode 1 as well. Quick thoughts on the old revisiting Episode 1 in 2023.
It was one of the first games I ever played, so I have such nostalgia for it. I remember every color vividly. I remember the delivery of every line.
Right.
I've never finished it, though. It's kind of like Silent Hill 1 was for me when I first retrieved my PlayStation 1 10 years ago again and played through all of Silent Hill because I had such nostalgia for it, but it was only the early levels and I never finished it. And finishing that felt like a chapter of my life. So I'm excited to do the same with this game because for the first 5 hours, I'll know every beat. But final levels, like when you're going up against Darth Maul and stuff, I've only ever seen my dad do that.
I love when you realize, like going back to an old game, that your childhood brain just gave up.
Yeah.
Like you were loving it and you have such fond memories of it, but for whatever reason, you were distracted by something and you just didn't finish it, even though you should have at the time.
Well, we were talking about this, I think, very briefly again a few weeks ago. You know, why did we replay the first levels of stuff so many times, even when you knew how to save games? Like Spider-Man or Star Wars. Mm-hmm. Like, I know the first levels of those games so much, and I finished Spider-Man a lot, but I would just replay the first level, and I don't know why. What was it about the first few levels that you could just, like, spend a lot of time in, and you could literally just keep repeating?
Oh, my God, that first level of the PS1 Spider-Man, that was the Insomniac Spider-Man / the Spider-Man 2 of its day. Like, I remember, because it was, like, in my childhood. I mean, I remember playing that. That's still my favorite Spider-Man game, and, like, you have a chunk of the city to swing around in. Obviously, it's, like, 4 buildings, but it's cool. There's random thugs you can find, like you can explore, you can climb the walls. Like, I loved that thing. Like, I used to, because that was what they gave out for free in the demo. So I used to just hang around in that part of the city being like, I'm Spider-Man.
I would never play a game like this now, but like you were saying, in that first area when you've got like 4 or 5 buildings, I undoubtedly have crawled every inch of those buildings and that area so many times over my life. I know I've literally done Spider-Man's little
shimmy. Little crouch crawl that he does.
Yeah, the little crouch crawl that he does over every little inch of every little pixel in that opening area.
I remember thinking,
I don't know.
I was so cool that if you go on a wall and like crawl down towards the floor, he does like a handstand flip.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is so cool. And you could like web zip up to the roof. Also, the music that comes on when the thugs fight you is like the sickest little bass riff. Like, it's the coolest thing. It's just like, it's
filthy.
Perfection.
It is
filthy.
It's great. It's like the music in that game is just incredible. The actual theme, like the Spider-Man theme, after you get, you know, Spider-Man.
Yeah.
It goes into this like little like rap about Spider-Man, and it goes so hard. It's so 90s. That entire game, even though it released in 2000, is so 90s. Yeah. Like the version of Venom in that game is like this.
My favorite version of Venom by far.
Like a doofus, goofy guy.
He's great.
Not at all. The sort of more intimidating version of the character that I know people love. And I remember playing it again for the first time since I was a kid, in thinking, oh, this is not my Venom, but then being won around by how much of a goofball he is.
He definitely starts as the more intimidating Venom, and he's all like, and whatever, but then once you become friends with him, like there's that bit where he's just like, oh, how are we going to proceed? And he's like, surf the web. And like young me's like, oh, this is the best writing ever. but yeah, that game was awesome. Speaking of awesome stuff, you've been playing through more Dead Space. You're a hell of a lot further in than I am because I've just been living on Metroid Prime, but we'll talk about Dead Space first.
Yes.
How are you finding it?
Just a quick check-in, man.
Is it good?
This game just keeps getting better, you know. We've talked about it a few times, but now I'm 12 hours in on chapter 9 of 12.
That makes it a lot longer than the original.
That's it. It feels like such a chunky experience, and they have introduced some new side missions and whatnot to extend the runtime, but I just love drinking it all in, going very slow, playing it through on hard, so I'm really managing my resources, and I think it's pretty much the perfect remake. I love the changes that they have made this time around. I love that they encourage you to use more weapons. Like, one of the biggest criticisms of those early Dead Space games is that you could just use the plasma cutter, and like that's the best weapon you get, you know, and that's kind of still true, but whatever ammo management system they've introduced has had me cycling through all the weapons available, and all of the weapons themselves are so satisfying to use with the DualSense controller with the haptics. Each, like, the resistance you get on something like the pulse rifle or the flamethrower or whatever feels chunky. It kind of has that Dead Space chunk, that Dead Space weight that is so, you know, unique to that franchise. And it's just, it looks great. It's probably one of the best looking games I've ever played.
It is. Oh, man. It made me like hark for like a newer Alien game, like a third person Alien game. There is something about the Ishimura's design philosophy, art direction in that game that obviously owes a lot to Ridley Scott or the art departments for those games. Because everything's just sort of metallic and dripping and cold and dark. And I was like, I love that industrious space mining ethos.
Yeah.
In things like Alien and this.
With HDR on, I just think it's next level, you know, playing that on like a big TV. It's one of the first times where I've thought, funnily enough, considering it's a remake, I just thought like, this is next gen. This feels next gen. I was wondering going into it after playing the Callisto Protocol, which, you know, I didn't love, but thought looked gorgeous. Yes. I actually watching the trailers for Dead Space, I thought this might not look as good or might not be as graphically or technically impressive. I was so wrong on that, because walking through the USG Ishimura and all of its different, you know, gnarly sights that it has to offer has just been incredible. It's one of those games that, even though I've been going through it slow, every time I jump on it, I just have that feeling of, oh, this is a good video game. This is a really good video game.
I think things like that, like Evil West, like just sort of like even something like Sifu is like such a reminder of what games just need to be. Obviously, we talk about this so much, but it's like that whole idea of like everything being this like bloated multiple currency battle pass, whatever. It's like, just make a video game. It'll sell well. It'll do well.
Yeah.
Like Dead Space is like blown up in the charts. Dethroned Forspoken. Forspoken wasn't even on the throne. Forspoken trying to get in the room. But still, Dead Space doing very well in the charts, and it's just like people just want a nice packaged video game that is designed to be completed, that is designed to be fun and enjoyable and memorable, and feels like a bunch of people actually wanted to make it.
Yeah,
like unlike the vast majority of everything else.
That's it, man. And I hope it sells well. I know it's next gen only, which might hinder it in the short term, but I hope it has, you know, legs on it.
I think the price point will turn people off.
That's like, it. Yeah. You know, it's like £70, $70 for a Dead Space remake is steep. I'm grateful that it has the length that it has for the price. I would have maybe been a bit disappointed if I blasted through it in 6 to 8 hours. So the fact that I'm on hour 12 and, you know, still have some to come is alleviating that somewhat, but it is a lot to ask, I think.
Yeah, I don't think it's worth 70. Like, I just think that there's like I absolutely get, like, there's so many conversations around what a game is worth. It, because this is fundamentally a remake, like, there's something about that that in my head, it does sort of skew asking for a premium price point for a brand new game, where most games, if they release at 70, they don't stay at 70 for very long anyway.
Yeah.
So and especially Metroid Prime's like £40 or $40. So I'm just like, that's a more comfortable price point. I think that if there is a notable dip in sales or a notable lack of response, I'd almost squarely point that at the price point. Because as much as we love Dead Space, I was still like, oh my god, £70. That's a lot.
It is a lot. Like, I still think it's definitely worth a full price release. Like, I wouldn't have charged $40 for this, because I think the work that's gone into it is, you know, of that Resident Evil 2 quality.
Okay.
But even then, I do concede that they've bumped it up too much.
Yeah,
on top of that, it's kind of like when The Last of Us came out, which was a bloody great game that I can't stop thinking about, by the way. And I mean part one, the remake.
Yes.
But again, the question was, is it worth $70 when you can get a really good version of it, the remastered version of it, that's less than 10 years old?
Yeah, well, it's very like these companies just seeing what they can get away with. I mean, one of the things that I've got down in the news is that idea that even Nintendo are starting to try this £70 price point stuff with the next Legend of Zelda. But we'll get there in time. I still need to get through more Dead Space, but as I've mentioned in previous weeks, I Dead Spaced myself. I did a stupid thing where I played through 2 and 3 because I'd never done them. I thought that would revitalize my love of the IP, and it did. But it also meant that when I went straight into the remake, I was like, oh, I've kind of done this.
Yeah.
I've kind of just been doing this for the last 2 weeks. So I need to play through more.
As someone, before we move on to Metroid Prime, which I'm really eager to hear all about,
what a game.
Can you tell me, as someone who's played a lot of Dead Space, because playing this remake, I've not played the original since it came out, and I loved it at the time. But I forgot how much backtracking there was. I always knew that, you know, the Ishimura was its a distinct space that you were getting to know, but I kind of didn't realize how there were like 6 main areas, and in this remake you're going back to old areas a lot, and yes, uncovering new doors and new content, but you're traveling through older areas a lot more than I remember doing. But that might just be my memory.
No, well, I've long said that a criticism from me of Dead Space was that it is just very straightforward. Like, it is just go over here and find a console and push X, and then find the next console and push X, and they shake it up a little bit, obviously, like now with the extra levels and the extra like parts of levels where it's like choosing between doors opening and lights going off and whatever, but it's still fundamentally that game. Like, they haven't like overhauled the actual like geomesh of it that much.
I will say then, thank you very much for answering that question, but at the same time, as a final note, I want to point out how good the Force Gun feels use. If you don't know what the Force Gun is,
you can like blast people's like flesh off.
This is it. You use insane force out of this massive mechanical weapon, and it literally blows the flesh off the monsters.
So cool.
And in this game, which has such insanely detailed, you know, like flesh systems, where you're literally to cut someone's arm off, you have to cut through the muscle, then cut through like the tendon, then cut through the bone, and you see all of it.
Lush.
You hit one of these monsters with the force gun, and they look crazy. They look like they've literally been flayed, and their appendages are stuck on with like the most narrow newest bit of
bone. It's like a Mortal Kombat fatality gun.
It is so gnarly. The first time I did it, I thought I want an unlimited ammo cheat for this gun specifically, so I could just, and this sounds grim as hell, but like rip the flesh of all these monsters to the point where they, like, I can't believe the way they've been animated and look.
What happens to the skin? Do little skin suits fly off?
Yeah, it's really? Like, it's as if they're, man, I'm trying to think of
you know in Yakuza, I don't even play much Yakuza, but in Yakuza, when two guys are going to fight, they rip off their entire costumes in one go. Like, if you're wearing a three-piece suit, it's just grab all of it and fling because you're ready to fight. It just reminds me of that.
It's like that. And it's so funny because, you know, when you, like, the whole point of the monsters in Dead Space is that they only really take damage or substantial damage when, like, they lose limbs. Mm. So you can rip the flesh off one of these monsters to the point where, like, they're down to the bone. Mm. But they're still coming at you. But they're coming at you with these tiny little arms that are, like, literally barely, like, holding onto the body. And it is like, come on, guy, give it up. You're not coming back from this. You're nothing but bone at this point. You're a skeleton.
Where'd you come down on, for Dead Space weapons, where'd you come down on the pulse rifle, and where'd you come down on that buzzsaw one where you can hold the blade in front of you? Because I love the pulse rifle, but I get that that's like, people don't like that because it's not as punchy as it should be for a big assault weapon. But I always liked that. That was my most reliable weapon.
I liked it before, but I did get that criticism. I don't have that criticism in this game because the punch on it, I was thinking about the other day because I use the pulse rifle quite a lot because I always end up having a lot of ammo for it. Mm-hmm. But the way that they've introduced like the haptics to that weapon and the rumble to that weapon, I come away, if I pause it to go for a wee or something, I put the controller down after using it, and my hand is like numb.
Right.
Because it's been, you know, vibrating against my skin and it's been resisting against my finger so much that it has such a weight to it in this game that it literally makes my hand numb.
That's
so
cool.
I love that.
Because the one where you have to like float the blade out in front, like I've seen people do that where they then hold that blade like in an enemy. And I was like, I'm never comfortable that getting that close to them and just standing there because you always get swamped by something. There's nearly always something behind you, especially in the remake. And so I never got that comfortable with it. But when you let the blade go and fly at something, it doesn't do that much damage. So I always go to something else anyway.
Ah, see, when I use that weapon, it's definitely a close range weapon.
Yeah, yeah.
It's when I'm sort of backed into a corner and there's like two or three
it's
enemies
like a chainsaw
on me. Yeah, you're literally using it as a chainsaw just to surgically cut the limbs off, because the way like the damage model works, or at least for the way it works for me with a slightly upgraded version of it, is that it also knocks them back. It staggers them a little bit. So even though they're really close, they actually can't hit you because you've got this saw that's inside their stomach and you're just kind of ripping them apart. It feels like you're a sci-fi version of Ash from Evil Dead with the chainsaw, like you said. I love both those weapons. I think the best, like I said, man, the best part of this remake is how they've made using all the weapons a joy, where they used to still be fun, but they were so overshadowed, in my opinion, by the plasma cutter, that it didn't really make sense to use anything else. Even using a flamethrower, which I never use in video games just because it's always too cumbersome and I don't like it.
Same.
Feels powerful here. Mm. Again, like your Aliens comparison, it makes you feel like you're, you know, Ellen Ripley and you're going
like
through
jets
a nest.
Of fire.
Yeah, proper jets, and like the necromorphs are screaming, they're falling down. Rules, man. I feel like an absolute monster, but hey.
The thing is, like, I mean, we grew, obviously, you know, 90s stuff, 2000 stuff, you had games pushing towards gore. You had the Carmageddons, you had the Mortal Kombat, the Dooms, whatever. And I feel like over time, it was just like, okay, guys, not everything needs to have exploding limbs and whatever. And I obviously love gore in games. I love Mortal Kombat. I love how I get giddy watching new fatalities because they're just so stupid. It's like itchy and scratchy type stuff. But I kind of miss that. And so when you get a game that lets you sort of revel in that and have fun with it and have fun with gore, it's like horror movie fans. Like sometimes there's an appreciation of practical effects or gore or whatever it is. So like, I kind of miss that in a way. And so like something like Evil West as well, you can punch someone so hard that they just burst.
Yeah.
So it's just like, that's kind of fun. And so, I need to play more Dead Space, and I will. It was just one of those things where I didn't realize how much I was going to go from one to the next, go from two to three back to one again, and kind of effed myself over in regards to that familiarity. Because Dead Space 1, the remake, is just so snappy and fast and great. It is almost like where Dead Space 3 ended up in terms of how much you can just run around and mow through guys, which is great.
Especially with like the kinesis and the way that's been expanded, because that does just feel like you're playing Dead Space 2. Mm-hmm. You're Dead Space 3, there's so many environmental items that you can pick up and just launch enemies that makes that combat loop for me so satisfying.
I just want that. I mean, I've said this over. I need a t-shirt. Telekinetic powers in games. Let me look at if we have anything with a physics model, like anything with Havoc physics or whatever. I want to be able to just wrench a chair from an office and throw it at someone. Just give me a game where I can fling stuff at people. I'll never get tired of it. It's my favorite thing. Speaking of my favorite thing, I love Metroid, and I didn't even look at the Metroid Prime Remaster when they announced it. Price, rather. I just saw that it was available and just mashed the button until it was mine. And then that's all I've done is just had a other than my Sunday, which was an afternoon of Star Wars, my weekend has just been Metroid stuff. I played a bit of Metroid Fusion. I went back on Super Metroid for a little bit. I played a bit of Metroid 2.
Ooh.
And then I went, overall, I've been playing Metroid Prime. I'm like, I don't know, 3 hours or something into it. It's beautiful. It's brilliant. It's one of the best remasters in quite some time. And one of the best things about it, which is a weird sentence to say, is that it doesn't feel like a Switch game.
Yeah.
At no point are you reminded of the fact that the Switch pales in comparison hardware-wise to the other bigger consoles on the market. It just... I was going to swear there. It absolutely just goes, Josh Brown. And it's 60 FPS, 1080p. Like, you know, it's just a liquid butter game. It's been playtested into oblivion in the best way possible. And so if you like your Metroids, if you like the idea of item or weapon-based, you know, puzzle environments where you're unlocking the next thing based on the next upgrade you just got, it's one of the best ones of them of all time.
Well, this is it, man. I've not played a Metroid game apart from the original Metroid game, which I played the Switch and hated.
You probably did.
Of course I did. You know, I
the first ones are really, really hard to just go back to.
When I was looking online, everyone said, you know, skip the first one, play the second
Super
one.
Dude. Like, yeah. Super's what you want. Super Metroid is what everyone wants.
Absolutely. But I've always wanted to play a Prime, but those games have always been limited for me. However, now that this is on Switch and it looks as gorgeous as it does, I can't wait to jump in because I feel like I've played all of the games that have imitated this game and loved them. So I'm really excited to see what the original was all about.
I definitely still point you towards Super. I think like Super and Dread are the two best 2D ones by my money. I love the remake of Metroid 2 that they did on the 3DS a few years ago because it has the like radial 360 aiming and it has Dread's like counter. Like if an enemy's going to hit you, you can counter and do like a finisher, which they did a lot more of in Dread. But so I'd still point to like if you want to be like, okay, what does this IP bring to gaming? That's still very much Super Metroid.
We were talking maybe on podcast, maybe off podcast last week about our kind of like approach to playing old games and you know some games you go back to and you can appreciate like as a almost like a museum piece to understand the context and the history of it but for me while I quite like doing that for some games if I don't enjoy it in the present tense then I'd rather watch like a video on it and because like Super Metroid was such a game that was so inaccessible to me for such a long time I feel like I know every inch of it because I've watched so many video game essays on it I've watched so many people talk about that game
there's almost a shame in that because you'll know the power-ups
that's it I do and I know the power-ups I know a lot of the secret areas and where to like go and stuff and I'm sure I still would enjoy it but that's one of those games that I was always so interested in but because it wasn't available to me I've sort of devoured through osmosis and through directly watching other people talk about it and do critiques of it so it's kind of a strange one I've not played it but if I played it now it'll be like replaying a game.
I would definitely, I mean, I would, Super Metroid is one of my all-time favorite games, like absolutely top three or five. Like it's way up there. Like I just love that whole game. Metroids, when they're done well, are this like perfect feeling of empowerment over time, twinned with environmental exploration. And like Prime is like a condensed version of that in 3D. Like Prime 1 is like the smallest of the trilogy in terms of the overall amount of levels you're going through. And there is quite a lot of backtracking. You do unlock a lot of abilities that speed things up. And like, you know, you obviously have the Morph Ball and you can get a boost for that and whatever. But it just looks gorgeous. Like if we're talking about it as a remaster, it is just something you can just give to someone now and be like, this is why Metroid matters to some degree. I think you get more out of the 2D ones, but still Prime, the Prime remaster just is very well put together. You can tell Retro Studios really cared about this and hence it was obviously their original anyway, but it just does come together. It does just work. And like I love Samus as a character. I love Metroid as a fiction. So like it's a big dumb fiction. It's like a big, you know, weird dragon thing as a leader of some pirates and they all have terms like the Galactic Federation, the Pirates with capital P. Like, we're just going with that. The science department are in charge of the suits that you wear and stuff. So, like, it's very 1986. Like, obviously, they just kept those terms going forward. But yeah, in terms of what people remember from Metroid Prime, your mind will have upscaled it over time. Mm. And thankfully, it's one of those things where this just is what your mind remembers it being. And it's not one of the, it's not until you really do side-by-sides that you realize just how much they overhauled. But there's things that you don't expect to see on the Switch, like smoke effects, fire effects, like all these different environmental things and atmospheric stuff that just really most of the time we associate it with the bigger consoles because they can afford the hardware or they can afford the processing time or processing weight of it. It's just a beautiful game, like overall.
Even as an outsider, it feels weird that they're marketing it as a remaster and not a full remake when it feels so much of an overhaul, you know, on par of something like Dead Space. You know, you look at them side by side and like looking at them and how much they've leaped in terms of technical quality since their originals, like I would be billing that as a full on remake.
It's interesting,
just a remaster.
Yeah, the biggest difference is obviously the visuals. Like Prime on GameCube was always really responsive anyway. It's just that this feels nice and snappy. But yeah, the main thing side by side is the visuals, and just like adding so much more environmental detail and like lighting. And obviously, I'm playing it on the OLED Switch, which you know if you play it, there's a really cool bit which it's quite blurry, but I love the idea of it where you get access to like a thermal visor, and it's a bit like Dead Space. All the lights shut off, and you have this like Predator style thermal vision, and you're just in the room with these like acrobatic enemies that are like hanging from the roof, but you're in a room with other things that have heat signatures, so you're trying to find them in the dark, and it's just a really cool set piece, and you're trying to escape this facility as you're trying to find these creatures in the dark, and it's like little things like that that really work in like upscaled, because it still has like a blur effect because it's trying to be like this other vision mode, but it's just a cool set piece, and just things like that, like exploring those games are an absolute joy. The thing that I think you would like about it is that you loved Outer Wilds.
Yes.
And I think there's a little bit of Metroid's DNA in Outer Wilds, like that idea of going back and forth to different environments and seeing what else you can tweak. Okay, now I've got this ability or this item, what can I open up? And like memorizing the environment and whatever, and like keeping your eye open, realizing there's a path that, you know, if I blow this wall, I can go this way and whatever. And like the beauty of like Prime, it's like you don't realize how much your hand is being held because you can complete things in different orders. And it's always rewarding because of that. It's like there's always a beauty in there, yeah, of like game design. So I'd recommend Metroid Prime Remastered to everyone. I mean, I like love Metroid as an IP, and I love right now that Nintendo are like reinvesting in Metroid. Like Metroid Dread blew away all their sales expectations, and like now we've got the Metroid Prime thing coming out. In game industry terms or thought processes, you rarely get a remaster without the next game coming soon.
Yeah.
So assumedly Prime 4 is around the corner as well, and it's also Retro Studios. So I love this entire IP, and I'm glad it's back. It's been away for like 30 years,
hey,
so it's pretty good.
Maybe now I finally dust off that copy of Metroid Dread and play that
Please
in Prime
do.
Back to back. Maybe the next bubble that I have after my big survival horror binge will be Metroid. Maybe it's finally time.
I would just say to you that you should definitely... Super Metroid is like essential stuff. That's like this. That's just God tier gaming. I would do Super, I would do Dread, and I would do this Prime Remaster. That's a beautiful little trilogy.
I like
that'll
that.
Show you like what matters the most, I guess, for this IP.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast. Alongside my good friend, John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
For the news, though, to transition from what we've been playing into the latest things doing the rounds online, The Evil Within 3 got a teaser.
Yes! Got
a little Easter egg Scott teaser.
Tilford!
I know! I thought we'd open talking about this on the news section because Inside Hi-Fi Rush, which is Tango Gameworks' latest game, which is like a rhythm action platformer hack and slash thing. I finished it. I'm struggling to describe the thing. It's Devil May Cry with a sort of a synth pop soundtrack. Inside that game, there's a level towards the end. I think it's in like chapter 11 or something. That shows like a news ticker feed on one of the screens, and people have paused it and looked at what one of the headlines is on the screen in-game, and it says sequel to popular survival horror franchise announced. Obviously that's in-universe or whatever, but we are all waiting on more Evil Within.
Oh, we really are, man. And you know what? I love that they've done Hi-Fi Rush. I even love that they've done Ghostwire Tokyo, but my true love from Tango Gameworks is the Evil Within because, and I just mentioned my survival horror binge that I'm about to embark on after Dead Space. That includes replaying The Evil Within 1 and 2 because I love 2. I've talked about it so much over the years, but I do think it's one of the best survival horror games of all time. Yep, I love the fact that they've taken what worked in Dead Space and Resident Evil 2, even though it was before Resident Evil 2, but you know what I mean, in Resident Evil generally, in Resident Evil 4 and Resident Evil 5, and opened it up to a semi-open world formula, you know, allowed you to kind of feel like you're not on a haunted house ride, but like you're almost curating your own haunted house ride by deciding which alleyway to go down. What scares are going to be down there? If I go into this house to do this side mission, what surprises is it going to have in store? The element of surprise in The Evil Within 2 is absolutely incredible, and it felt like they finally, with that game, understood what the franchise was.
Yep.
So to see that momentum not pay off with a quicker turnaround for 3, always disappointed me personally, and hopefully, if this is true, and this is really teasing an imminent Evil Within 3, they managed to capitalize on what made 2 such a success, because even though it didn't do all that well commercially, they were onto something, man.
I'm telling you, man. Semi-open world horror. Like, it doesn't need to be a gigantic map. It just needs to have that free-form approach to it where you have, like, in Evil Within 2's case, like a chunk of level, like a Hitman level.
Yeah.
And it's just sort of like various corners you can hide from enemies, various places they can plant jump scares where you don't realize you're walking into an area that has various set-piece triggers that are going to happen. And it lets the horror just completely overwhelm you because you just don't know. I never finished Evil Within 2. That's one of those games that I love to a point. There was a very specific encounter with some weird, like, magma lava men.
I remember, yeah.
That I just absolutely hated. And I was like, this is just so not what I want from this that I'm not going to get any further through it. But at some point, I would like to finish that game. But overall, though, I wonder if they did Hi-Fi Rush and they did Ghostwire Tokyo to get the money, get the capital to do the big Evil Within thing. Because that was Shinji Mikami's new horror IP after Resident Evil. So it makes sense to kind of, like, reinvest in that going forward. Because in the behind-the-scenes stuff, Hi-Fi Rush wasn't Shinji Mikami's idea. He just sort of got on board with it over time. So I would hope that his heart is still with Evil Within.
Me too. And I think it's a good time for it if it does come out within, you know, the next year or two, because we've got Dead Space now. We've got Resident Evil 4 coming out. We've got all of these great survival horror titles that are currently in vogue right now and people are loving and people are talking about. The Evil Within deserves to be spoken about alongside those great franchises, in my opinion, even though the first one is very much a proof of concept and a little bit weird and bad at times.
I love the story.
Yeah, I love
the world. I love this whole thing of, like, this like shared consciousness matrix animus machine, and then people's, like, darkest thoughts create creatures that we can all share because we're all plugged into this one thing.
Yeah,
I think that's a really cool idea. I like Revok's a kind of fun character. Reminds me of Jared Nomek from Blade 2.
Yes,
which is a pull.
Hell yeah!
But that dude's just so Jared Nomek. And then, like, 2 has that weird, like, photographer villain who's, like, taking photos and trapping people in photos and stuff. It's just so many cool ideas.
That's it. Like, for as much as I love Resident Evil and the lore of Resident Evil, and I absolutely do, that game is somewhat limited in terms of what it can do, where you're always referring it back to, like, a virus or a biohazard. Mm. So when they started doing seemingly more supernatural stuff in 7, people were kind of like, This might be scary, but you might be breaking the canon at the same time. We've got to tie it back into some kind of, you know, biological, like, almost man-made or man-synthesized thing. Mm. Whereas the plot of The Evil Within, where you are just in someone's mind and, like, subject to their darkest thoughts, opens up such creativity. Mm. Like, full spoilers for The Evil Within 1 at this moment in time. But the fact that that game takes place within the mind of a serial killer is nuts. And it opens, like I said, the door to so much possibility and so many surprises and so many mysteries that a more grounded world might be more limited with, maybe.
No, I always love that as a way for the devs to just have, because that's the thing, in Evil Within 2, you start getting like levels that are collapsing or like various different things. That, I mean, they do a bit of that towards the end of 1, but like stuff that is just experimenting with like that sort of Inception style, like, you know, worlds are folding in on themselves and stuff like that. It's like there's so much they can do with that. I just love that setup. I was just, I love The Matrix and I'm up for them doing like Matrix horror. It's like, that's such a great idea. Like you can do way more with.
Yeah.
So we'll keep an eye out with that. It is just an Easter egg at the minute, but it makes sense to do more with that. Jeff Grubb from the Game Mess show over on Giant Bomb, obviously known leaker, known dude who says stuff that comes true, has said that a low-key state of play is coming in the next 4 weeks and a proper PlayStation showcase will come after. This makes sense, obviously, because Nintendo just did their Direct where they blew everybody away. Xbox did their Developer Direct where Hi-Fi Rush dropped. Sony are the only one that hasn't had something to show, and I feel like they have. They should have been way more on it with PSVR 2. Like, I just feel like they're resigning that to a blog, and then after all that stuff happens, maybe they'll do a follow-up thing of like, hey, by the way, guys, this thing is available. But I feel like there are so many games and just general housekeeping that Sony should be doing right now.
For me, if we're doing predictions for what these shows are going to be, I think the imminent state of play is going to be focused on PSVR. It's going to be focused on Final Fantasy 16, which is one of the only other games of theirs that has a date right now.
It's also in that live from PS5 advert thing.
Yep.
They show Kratos and Spidey and Final Fantasy.
Absolutely. I think we'll probably see stuff about Street Fighter 6 and maybe something about Spider-Man, maybe a reaffirmed release date or maybe a new trailer. And I think the showcase is where we see proper gameplay for Spider-Man. We see whatever else they're cooking up. Maybe more of the DLC for Horizon, maybe a new announcement for Ghost of Tsushima 2 or something like that. Maybe we finally see The Last of Us factions, and that's the one I'm looking forward to more. I always quite like the state of players, but we kind of know what they are at this point, and they're often either showcases for a big imminent game or a nice little update for indie games or third parties or some smaller first party stuff. Whereas the showcase, I feel like we've been starved of that for literally over a year now. Well, we didn't get one last year, and we have so many unknowns with Sony right now that we need to know.
Totally. I mean, I feel like, for me, I don't feel like they know what they are. Like, I feel like they sort of, like, the realm they're entering into is this, like, live stream version of E3, Game Awards, you know, Summer Games Fest, whatever. It's in that space. And they try and meet it out by saying, like, oh, we got some blog post announcements. And they'll maybe do a tweet the night before saying, like, hey, we're not announcing anything first party. But that never seeps through to the mainstream, or at least the amount of people that want to watch these things. They're always going to expect, if PlayStation say we're going to announce some games, we're going to announce anything, the default is what's the coolest thing that could be there.
Right.
And I feel like everyone is always let down by that. And it's always that thing of like them sort of, like I said, like competing with Nintendo Direct, competing with that idea that anything can happen. And they sometimes nail it. But I think for me, most of the time with the state of play, they've not. I feel like people come away from Nintendo Direct freaking out, and it dominates Twitter, it dominates social media for that night or the day after. Like, how much traction was all that Game Boy and Metroid Prime stuff doing? Versus a state of play just going like, I guess that's a DLC for something, like, or whatever it is. So I get that they're splitting it between a you know, like a smaller state of play announcement, maybe a PSVR specific one, and then do the PlayStation showcase for everything else going. Maybe we get a Wolverine teaser or something. But I feel like the optics of how they roll that out could be a lot clearer. Like, Nintendo's are just so clear. They hang back, they do a Direct. It's filled with big stuff. Like, Nintendo has not missed a Direct before.
As someone who is an outsider to the Nintendo stuff, the Nintendo Direct stuff, I always think, as an old man, like, I've seen you and James Dowse so disappointed by Directs before, where you're expecting something big, and then you get, like, minor updates. And is that not kind of similar where,
my mind was forgotten
great.
Then.
Right, okay.
I don't remember being disappointed by a Direct.
I remember one time, distinctly, you and James Dowse were watching it on your phones at work, and you were both, I think we were doing a podcast, and Dowse had been watching it, and we went upstairs half an hour into the show, and we were like, have we missed much?
And he was like, he's like, no.
Nothing at all, you've not missed anything. But maybe I'm just, maybe that was only one time, I don't know.
I know, I definitely think that that's, like, that must have happened in the past. I think that even the most recent Nintendo Direct was quite flat for the first half. It's just that they ended strong. They had the Game Boy stuff, they had the Metroid Prime, and they had the Zelda big finish. Like, it's one of those sort of, like, psychological things for a movie where as long as you're smiling as the credits roll, you'll remember the whole thing more positive than it actually was.
Yeah.
It feels like that. I feel like that's what Sony fall down on. You'd, like, they'll say, like, one more announcement, and it'll just be that, like, you know, some DLC's coming to something. It's as I feel like they're not as good at rounding out their presentations as they should be.
I fully agree about the state of players. I think the state of players, we've had some good ones, but they aren't, like you were saying there, they aren't of the same caliber of the direct where anything can happen. Mm-hmm. However, I do think over the past 4 years, they've knocked their showcases out of the park. So that's the one I'm looking forward to. State of play is fine. I'll look forward to it, but I'm not going to get excited about it. I don't think we'll be doing like loads of mad predictions on it. To me, though, when that showcase comes out before June, I think they can't really lose with the stuff that they could announce. If they show The Last of Us Factions, if they show Spider-Man 2 gameplay, if they give us another trailer for Wolverine, if they show us the DLC for Horizon, if they maybe announce something God of War related, or Ghost of Tsushima related, or maybe have the Metal Gear remake there, or maybe more Silent Hill. Like, they have a lot of that we know about that is in development that feels right to show now, and they have a lot of stuff presumably that we don't know about, and I feel like with a year and a half off, they almost can't lose with that showcase.
You would hope not. That's definitely what I feel like recently they've chased Nintendo's business model in terms of let's double down on the first party IPs that we have and the things that we can control and make sure that people know that we are the studio responsible for your Spider-Man's, your God of War's, your Horizons, whatever. And then it then sets it up for, okay, your next like showcase thing should just be like hit after hit after hit, with everything being recognizable and championed and whatever, which is mostly why people love those directs. Like, I mean, even if you're not, if talking about the second half of the most recent one, you still had Kirby was in there, you still had like Fire Emblem stuff being announced. Like, it's all recognizable IP, and I feel like because stuff is set up so much for PlayStation to smash it out the park, anything less than oh my god, like consistent oh my god reactions feels like a bit that it's quite deflating. It depends on the structure of that show and everything, but they did, like you said, they have so much to show, like Final Fantasy 7 Remake Part 2, like things that they can call their own that like are in theory still coming to Xbox but just haven't yet, that would get a lot of people talking. It's just that for me, they've never steered into it. Nintendo feel like they have they hold back and then they like give you stuff to talk about, whereas most of the time I come away from a state of play just going like, okay,
a state of play, that's the distinction, and that's I want to make, right? The state of play, I absolutely agree, but when I talk about like those big wow moments, it is the showcases, it's the E3 showcases, it's the old PSX celebrations that they used to do where it was hit after hit after hit,
right,
after hit, after hit, after hit. You get Kratos coming out of the
dark. I was just going to say, that was their last big moment.
Yeah. Oh, see, I wouldn't agree with that either.
What have they have since then?
They've had The Last of Us 2 since then, I want to say. Yeah, they've had Ghost of Tsushima since then, which I really loved.
And game-wise, I love. I'm talking about like big E3-style reveals that they sort of curate themselves. I mean, that was an E3 moment.
That was.
But I'm trying to think of like something where they did a live stream where like something was revealed, something that no one expected, like something like that. That tends to be something that they could do a lot more of.
Probably, for me, like, was Final Fantasy 16 theirs when we had Tekken 8 and Final Fantasy 16 where they were like big moments?
Oh, you're not wrong. I think the last one was the reveal of Tekken 8. Yeah, what am I talking about? That was an incredible reveal. maybe they've got more irons in the fire than I think.
Well, this is it, but I do agree that like those are separate from regular state of players in my mind. Like, state of players are smaller updates that might have a few good games, but it's the showcases that's when your excitement is allowed to go through the roof and your mad predictions are allowed to come out, because
The Last Guardian 2.
They have proven that anything can happen in those showcases. When The Last Guardian was announced, when we got Final Fantasy VII Remake, and they have enough momentum, hopefully, to not disappoint me. I'm going to eat those words in a few months, no doubt, but I feel they need to deliver because they have had a year and a half off.
That's the thing. It's a lot of time since then. And I feel like, you've got Nintendo saying we do the directs. They sometimes do those treehouse streams where they'll just play stuff afterwards, but it's nowhere near as marketed as the Nintendo Direct. Like, you think a Nintendo live stream, it's the Direct. You can go to that one place and look at all the new stuff. And then it feels like everybody has tried to do their own version of that. And Sony, for me, have struggled optically with the difference between a state of play and a PlayStation showcase. Xbox have sort of like done their that X3 stream, whatever it was called. There's like that whole specific Xbox showcase that they kind of streamed out, and they did that demo showcase for a little bit. Now they did the developer direct. It was okay, let's try this. It's straight from the developers announcing their own games and stuff, which worked better in terms of Hi-Fi Rush, because everybody was talking about Hi-Fi Rush. And I feel like they're all just trying to do what Nintendo started. Like, Nintendo were the first ones to break away from E3 and just say, we don't even need that. We've got our own stream, and it's consolidated into a direct. And so, not that I'm being this big Nintendo fanboy, even though I love Nintendo.
No, they would.
I still feel like they, they showed like they were the first ones to pioneer this sort of live stream approach to first party announcements and things like that. And it is the competition trying to find the best way to compete with that. Overall, we should just get good stuff coming. So
we better, man, because we know we got Spider-Man this year, and we've already had Forspoken, which was a huge hit by all accounts, critically and commercially, of course, being sarcastic there. but we have, Spider-Man at the end of the year. We have Final Fantasy 16 yet to come. We've got Final Fantasy 7, mm-hmm. the second part of that remake, which is allegedly coming out this year as well. Who knows
so
if it
much
will.
This year.
But there's a lot, and those are three big Sony games. Yeah, two of them are second party, mm-hmm. third party, whatever. So it's like, what else have you got up your sleeve? Mm-hmm. Have you got anything else for this year? Because I don't necessarily think they need anything else to release this year, mm-hmm. but they need to announce stuff for next year because we have no idea what's coming out then. Maybe Wolverine, but nothing else on top of that.
No, and it's like they're finally back on top of the supply stuff as well. So it's like this is the year where you let everybody get a PS5 and catch up on what they missed across the last couple of years. Get them all on Returnal or something. And then next year you go, hey, here's all the next-gen exclusive stuff. And like all those things will be in production. So it's like it makes sense to, I mean, it's not that I want another tide over. Yeah, you're still going to get Spider-Man 2, Final Fantasy 16. But that actual, like, okay, open the faucet, like, all the new next-gen games, that's probably going to be next year.
Well, yes.
Wellity.
In like, you know, totality, I do think that'll definitely be, you know, we'll get a proper next-gen year next year. But I do think they've set themselves up well with the stock, you know, actually being in a healthy place at this moment in time, because all of the games we just reeled off there, Spider-Man 2, Final Fantasy 7, Final Fantasy 16, they are all PS5 exclusive. They're not cross-gen.
True.
So it's like, they are reasons to pick up this console, and Spider-Man in particular, I do think is going to be a big system seller.
I feel like the original, was it 2018 for the first Spidey?
Yes.
Was like just this like point in time, and I feel like, Spider-Man 2 is going to be a massive, it's not that they don't have stuff that's going to be massive deals. I'm just talking about, that wider idea of like, okay, the next generation has finally kicked in, because things like Dead Space being next gen only is good to see, and is reassuring as to like the idea of the caliber of stuff that's coming, going forward. Not like Forspoken 720p at 60fps or whatever it is. The next thing I've got down is Windows Central's Jez Corden saying that Starfield's coming in June this year. He was talking on the Xbox 2 podcast and said a lot of people think that the Starfield launch date might be tied to International Space Day, which I then Googled, it's in April. But he says, I'm of the opinion that Starfield is going to be released in June. The latest information I have suggests a June release. That's kind of soon.
It is. That's
only like a few months away.
It really is. And you know what?
You might as well do a big summer game. Nothing ever's out in the summer. Like, legit, it's always dead.
Exactly, it's always dead. And if you're going to release a 100-hour-plus big space-faring RPG, do it in the summer when I personally have time to play it. You know, when I'm not surrounded by other games. When I'm not skateboarding. when VR's lost its luster after a few months. Give me Starfield. No, I would love that. I don't want it to come out at the end of the year where we're all fighting for, you know, bandwidth in the gaming realm. And this first half of the year right now was packed. Next week, we're getting the PSVR. We're getting,
Like
a Dragon. That's next week.
Oh my God.
We're getting, you know, what is that, the one? Wolong Fallen Dynasty. Yes. We're getting a bunch of games that are about to drop. Take the summer. Hopefully you're good, Starfield. Hopefully you're a good experience. just allow yourself a few months to dominate the conversation.
Yeah, there's always that, like, it's almost like a knock-on from the idea that E3 or the various announcements used to be in the sort of middle of the year, that you wouldn't actually get game releases around that time because everyone's preparing for the holiday. And that general assumption of spending habits meaning that people have more disposable income towards the end of the year because they're buying for Christmas or whatever it is anyway. But, like, that always does mean that there's a massive gap in the middle of the year. It's almost every year there's, like, very little in June, July. So that would make perfect sense. And the idea, like that idea of the game largely being finished for quite some time now, you might as well just bug fix even more and then release some pristine thing across the summer.
Yeah, pristine.
I would like that.
Is the word, I think. It's got to be pristine. It's got to make a splash. It's got to dominate the conversation, like I say.
So I'll roll something else into this because we can talk about just that wider idea of sitting on games until they're, you know, 100% ready. Because Metroid Prime and Fire Emblem Engage have apparently, well, research has been done into Metroid Prime first being listed by the German rating organization back in July 2021, and the idea that that game was ready way back then, and then finally coming out now, it's like 18 months later or whatever. Fire Emblem Engage was also a game that was listed on a ratings board like quite some time ago, and then now they both came out. So I just think that's an interesting pivot, that idea that like just because a game is ready, you don't need to immediately put it out.
Yeah.
If you have enough money, like Nintendo, you can sit and be more calculated about it. It's not just about releasing it just because you can.
I think it was the same with the Modern Warfare 2 remake, not COD Modern Warfare 2.
Yep.
You know, like
the original.
Remake of the original, which, you know, apparently, allegedly, was finished quite quickly after they released the remake of Modern Warfare 1. Mm. And then Activision just sat it because they didn't really know what to do with it.
Right.
Because apparently, these are according to the reports, the multiplayer was also remastered. But then Modern Warfare, the reboot was such a success that they knew they were going to do Modern Warfare 2 and incorporate some of the maps in either there, so they didn't want to cannibalize their own sales. So they ended up sitting on the remastered campaign and then released that a few years after it was allegedly finished, because it was a case of, we've got so much Call of Duty, how do we fit in more Call of Duty?
I love them just being like when you order food from like a takeout place and it's like, did anyone actually order this? And it's like, well, I guess we'll have it. I mean, you might as well. We've got everything else.
Yeah.
Give it to someone. But yeah, I like that idea, because obviously it's worked wonders with Metroid Prime Remaster. They can, I mean, a lot of the conversation was around the idea of remastering the trilogy. I think originally that came from Imran Khan, who used to work for Kind of Funny, saying that whole trilogy was just sitting there waiting to be released. And that was like the general sort of conversation, was that Nintendo were just sitting on it. And because Metroid Prime 4 was restarted, they would just sit and wait and wait and wait until things made more sense. Which right now it does. Like, Metroid Prime is being talked about again. So if they then do something for Metroid Prime 4, maybe towards the end of the year or whatever, then that does make more sense. I just like that more. That's more considered than just like, get it out the door. Like, I think anything that gets away from broken games day one, I'm 1,000,000% for.
100%. I think, you know, obviously, you want a game to be as polished as it can be, and if that means holding on to it for a little bit, that's great. I do worry about the potential cynical side of this, where we're seeing it in the movie space, where completed movies just get shelved or canned and they never release, and that sucks when someone has spent 5 years of their life working on a game and a publisher decides, no, now's not the right time, and then they wait too long and they think, oh, now's never the time. Like, if that Call of Duty report is true and the work was put into remastering the multiplayer and that was never released and never will release now, that sucks.
Yeah, that just sucks.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, like, I mean, I mentioned GoldenEye. No, I didn't. I was talking to you about GoldenEye before we were recording. GoldenEye on the brain over here. But they did have that full remade version of GoldenEye that wasn't the Daniel Craig one that went to the Wii and wasn't the original, that was going to be on Xbox Live Arcade back in like 2006 or whatever it was, that just never came out. And that does still exist somewhere. So, like, there's probably a whole bunch of games that were like gotten to a certain point and then not put out, that like would just sit there until the right time or whatever license dispute got in the way that meant they couldn't happen. But I think that's a fascinating wrinkle to video game development cycles, especially when we see so many games that just do release in broken states that just need a little bit more time, and are 99% of the time released in that state to hit a financial window, to hit some sort of pleasing shareholder window, where someone like Nintendo can be like, we're Nintendo, we're just going to hang back and, like, you know, release it when it's ready, which I would prefer that overall, as long as they stick to it.
I wish EA did that with Titanfall 2.
Yes. Oh my God, yeah.
A good game. They could have released that early the year afterwards, where no games of that caliber were coming out in the first-person shooter space, and just dominated that sales period out of getting out of the way of Call of Duty, getting out of the way of their own Battlefield 1, and just allowed that game to breathe. But no, they had to get that thing out before
that was
the holiday.
Like a proper like human shield in front of something. Like, that was, because that was that year, 2016, when Advanced Warfare was coming out, and it was like, well, we need something techie to compete with this, so just throw Titanfall 2 in the face of it. Oh my God. Like, that, I always think, like, that and Mad Max releasing on the same day as Phantom Pain are the two worst release dates in gaming history.
Yeah.
Because that Mad Max game is brilliant, as we always say, and it was just completely overshadowed. And then, Titanfall 2, you just killed an IP. Which, like, Apex tried to revive it, but it's still dead. Like, we found out the other week that the next Titanfall isn't happening anymore. So,
It's so horrifying to be able to peek behind the curtain and know why release dates are the way they are. You know, we see so many games coming out now at the end of February, maybe even early March, because, like, the financial year ends at the end of March and the beginning of April. So it's publishers wanting to get these games out so they have, you know, higher earnings to report, so they can say, we shipped these games in this financial year.
Yep.
Here's how they did. Here's our numbers. Whereas if they delay that to the next financial year, this financial year that they're in will look weaker and they'll have to explain it. And it's like, man, like, that's not good for
gamers. What's the rush?
Yeah.
Why do you need to do all this? Like, just give it a minute. Like, it's all right. You're not going anywhere.
It was the same last year, right? Where so many games got delayed from holiday 2021. And then we got the big February, March rush, because that was pretty much the limit of when they could be delayed to, because anything past then would knock it into the next financial year. Not every publisher was able to take that big hit, but it meant we got the packed February, where a game like Horizon Forbidden West sort of came and went because it was immediately overshadowed by Elden Ring.
That might be number three on the worst release dates. <Yes. laughs> That would possibly compete.
And that's that's why I would kind of like back what you were talking about there, because that's when you're also underserving the people who worked on these games,
yep.
who put years of their time, years of hard work into them, just to see arbitrary release date be slapped on it mm-hmm. to hopefully make the most amount of money, but it doesn't give it the legs, it doesn't give it the space that it deserves. So hopefully this Starfield thing is more considered.
And also, like, you know, things, they do release early, they release broken, they don't sell like the Avengers or whatever it is. Obviously, there's more problems to that game. But even the WWE games recently, like I bought 2K22 last year, first wrestling game in like 20 years or whatever, to play AEW games, matches. But still, they shifted that whole release calendar because, like, obviously the year before that, they missed one. And the year before that, it was absolutely disastrous. And then this year's game, which like usually that slot was a holiday slot, but now it's like the next game's coming out in March, which like you said, is the end of a financial window, but is more manageable for that dev team. They're not crunching to get it out before Christmas just to try and capitalize on all the Christmas stuff. So maybe some steps can be taken in that direction overall. But I just like the idea of, you know, like calculating when it's best to put something out and not just kicking it out the door and hoping for the best. Because there's been a lot of just hoping for the best yeah. with a lot of broken stuff.
And I mean, yeah. I do think we are inching towards, you know, a better release schedule than we ever had. You know, I've just slagged off the February release date there, but that's better than what we had before then yep. when even that would be unthinkable for some developers who would just say, no, get this game out in November, get this game out in September because we need to hit that Hollywood window, the holiday window.
Yes.
Now we do have that space of, okay, it can be delayed. It can come out in January. We actually can have good games that release in January and February now, which we couldn't 10 years ago, really, not to this scale. Mm-hmm. So we are inching closer towards a happier release schedule, I think. I just want to see that pushed even further.
Same. There's also the irony of like trying to double down on live services and being like, well, everyone's playing games at all times. They're always they're always available. The audience is always there, but you can't put the game out now. They're not, no one will buy it. There's no one there. It's just, the industry continues to eat itself most of the time. But for now, this has been The Wind-Up. I've been Scott Tilford. You've been Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure, Scott Tilford.
Always a pleasure to be heard by all of you, and we'll catch you next week.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That's the sound of another sale on Shopify in store. Shopify POS is everything you need to sell in person. From payments to inventory, Shopify unites your sales into one commerce platform. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/retail23. shopify.com/retail23.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.